So I travel around a lot, and one of the things that I hear all the time, and a lot of times I'm speaking on generations, so it doesn't matter really who the client is. One of the things we hear is like kids these days, and I think you always hear that, right? Kids these days, kids are not what they used to be. And I'm gonna go yes and no on that a little bit. One of the things that I hear a lot is kids aren't as tough as they used to be, and I know that's kind of a subjective statement, but I would somewhat agree with that, and I think there is a lack of resilience. That's actually what I want to talk about today is kind of building resilience into our kids. And I do think there is a lack of resilience for this generation in particular, but I don't think it's because kids have changed. Kids haven't changed. I think we as a culture have changed. And so that's kind of what I want to talk about and build into that resilience topic. It's the culture that's changed. It's the parents who have changed. I think we're changing the way we raise our kids, and we're raising them in a way that does not provide them the opportunity to build resilience. And you know, people say social media is changing everybody, and I kind of take the opposite perspective of the fact that social media is not changing anybody. I think it's just really exposing people for who they've been in the first place. People say, "Oh, well, everybody just wants to post their best stuff on social media." I agree. But people used to do that anyways. You'd go to church with a family and you would sit there and say, "Oh, everything is great." No matter what was actually going on at home, you're gonna put out your best stuff when you're there in public. And I think social media is just taking that and doing that to an exponential degree. So I don't think that's changing anything. But I think there is an expectation that kids are now just kids, right? We've created this bad word around teenagers that it's kind of given them these few years off rather than having this be a few years of their life where they actually start taking on more responsibility. We've said, "Oh, well, you're going to have essentially no responsibility." And that's the expectation that they're now living up to. And I've talked to a lot of parents who want to talk about the knowledge it's increased as far as brain development and understanding that, cognitive function isn't fully developed as their teens. I totally get it, totally understand. I totally understand the science behind that. But I think the danger spot is when we use that to still lower our expectations. Yes, they don't fully have that cognitive function, and there's going to be some things, they're going to make some knucklehead mistakes, and that's what teenagers do. But if we keep our expectations low and say, "So because of that, we're not expecting you to do anything," I think that's where we fall short of providing them with the opportunity for resilience. When you think back to somebody like Benjamin Franklin, who was 12 years old and had multiple businesses at the time, or somebody like George Washington, who was leading men as a teenager, you think back to them, their brains weren't more developed back then at that age. The expectations were different, and they rose to that occasion. And I think that's where we're really falling short, is that expectation piece for our kids. So, I want to talk about how to teach resilience. And really, I want to highlight an article that I read it was on fatherly.com, and I think it was 8 tips on how to teach resilience. So I just want to talk about those real quick. And I understand, from my own kids' perspective, when I'm looking at my own kids when they were younger, everything's a tragedy when kids are little, right? Morgan, if she had a specific doll, and if that doll did not stand up, she would lose her mind. Brielle, if her sister didn't want to play in the specific room of the house that she wanted to play in, she'd lose her mind. My boy right now is 2, and if he doesn't have the right superhero on his underwear, like, everybody's gonna know about that. So what that does, though, is it gives us opportunities to start young and start building in this concept of overcoming small things and being able to be resilient, so that we don't take that concept of a small thing becomes a tragedy in our lives as adults. Many adults see rejection of an idea or rejection of their belief as a rejection of them as their entire existence. And I think that's a dangerous place to be. And we've done that to a generation who's now raising kids to be overly sensitive about things and not able to be resilient. So I think we're going down kind of this rabbit hole that can be super, super dangerous. So, and just before I go into the 8 points too, we actually just had a great talk with some of the high schoolers out there. And one of the things that we posed, and we actually didn't dive into, I want to dive into it a little more, was, would you rather disappoint yourself or would you rather disappoint your family? Overwhelmingly, everybody said, "No, I'd rather disappoint myself than my family." So we don't have even the self-confidence to have the resilience to say, "Look, I need to do what's right, even if my family ends up getting disappointed." So I think resilience is a hot topic right now. So Resilience being a learned behavior, let's take a look at the 8 strategies that Fatherly put out there. So the first one they said was, let them struggle. And I love that one. Stop rescuing our kids in situations that they don't need to be rescued in. You know, unless there is severe physical harm that is coming upon them, the more opportunities we have to let our kids go have those hard conversations on behalf of themselves, the better we are doing. The more and the earlier they can get to work and have to struggle and shoulder more responsibility, all of those things help build resilience. So let them struggle. Second thing, let them experience rejection. It is always, it's tempting to call the coach about playing time or call a parent who didn't facilitate the play date the right way or call the teacher about, you know, the grade that wasn't deserved on that paper or whatever it is. But that lets them see that experience as a failure that somebody else had to come in and save them from, rather than looking at it as an experience that they now get to learn from and something that they can actually tackle by themselves. So let them experience rejection. Give them the tools to go forward with that and analyze that and go, okay, well, why did that happen? And now how do I move forward? Give them the tools to do that rather than going in and saving them. So that kind of goes into the third, which is don't condone a victim mentality. I like that. We want to advocate for our kids to make things fair. Totally get that. And that's great. But the problem is it can really lead to a learned helplessness as well. So, you know, one of our rules in the house is that we're not going to complain. We're going to fix it. We don't allow a victim mentality because that is something that snowballs and it's something that gets fed from the current culture too. So if we allow ourselves to take that on, then we find support in other people who are also creating that victim mentality for themselves. And that's a slippery slope. Fourth one that they put out there was empathize without taking the tools away of coping. It's simply validating their emotions and helping them walk through that game plan of how they want to attack whatever it is that's going on. The fifth one they put out there is get them to identify their emotions. It's self-awareness. It's understanding what kind of things make me angry, what kind of things make me happy, what kind of things make me sad, what kind of things make me mad. It's understanding what those are, and more importantly, how to identify that when that's starting to take on so then I understand how to cope with it. I've started to see the things that, you know, my kids, when they start fighting each other, I know that I'll look at it from a parent perspective and be like, oh, and so I know the best thing for me when they're fighting for something that I think is ridiculous is to first actually go into the other room and actually get some perspective real quick and go, man, I've got happy, healthy kids. They really don't fight that much. They're fantastic. I need to walk in the other room. I take that perspective. I come back. I can deal with the situation much more calmly. Helping our kids identify those things. And I hate using the word triggers because trigger makes it sound like there's no way to avoid it. But understanding what kind of things actually start to put those emotions in gear. A lot of times you'll have to do the self-awareness for your kids and say, okay, I know when this happens, and start building in those coping mechanisms for them. So speaking of combating, number 6, self-awareness to self-soothe. And that really kind of goes along with number 5. And essentially what we're doing is we're trying to avoid that safe space situation where they're having to not be able to self-soothe, take on something themselves and get that perspective themselves. They're having to outsource that. You're not always gonna be able to outsource that. So you've gotta be able to take that on yourself. Number 7, us as parents need to publicly admit our own mistakes and then fix them. It really goes down to leading by example. If we can show our kids, hey, I blew it here. Here's what I'm doing to fix it. You know, I say it over and over again, and I'll never stop saying it. Kids will do what we do before they do what we say. So when we're giving them that example, then they start to take that on and go, okay, I need to admit this, but then more importantly, I need to fix it. And number 8, they said connect kids' self-worth to their level of effort. And I love that. Everybody's got different abilities. Everybody has different strengths. So, you know, I try as much as I can, even as a parent, not say, hey, oh my gosh, you're so smart. I say, hey, I love the amount of effort you're putting in. I love the work you're putting in. I overemphasize the character traits when they're super kind to somebody else, when they're very respectful to somebody else, when they're working really hard. It's those character traits we overemphasize rather than some of the other ambiguous things. And I don't think, you know, this is a topic for a whole nother breakdown, but you know, the punished by rewards concept is a misunderstood fallacy, and I'm going to tackle that in another one. And I know Alfie Kohn is a big, you know, a lot of people are a big fan of his, and I'm a fan of his work too, but that's one place where it doesn't actually play out in reality a lot of times the way that he's putting it out there. So it's connecting their self-esteem to them working hard and treating other people the right way. When you connect their self-esteem to that, you're on the right track of building resilience. So I'd love to hear what you guys do to build resilience. So feel free to reach out. Everybody have a good day. Thanks.